This talk was given by Patrick Yunan Kelly at Zen Mountain Monastery. Yunan is a senior lay student in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
So good afternoon. My name is Yunan. I think I know a lot of you, but there's a lot of new faces here. I was last up here in May, so every time I come up here, things have changed. There's a new room upstairs. I try to go to the bathroom, and there's a door that I didn't recognize. So today, what I'd like to talk about is mistakes in practice and practicing mistakes. And this was inspired by a visit that we had down at the Brooklyn Temple by a woman who's a teacher at the Houston Zen Center, Galen Godwin. And she talked about Dogen's one continuous mistake. This is a phrase of Dogen. Well, there's some dispute about that, but we'll just assume that he said it. About the life of practice, one continuous mistake. And so she gave a mando on this, and I wasn't able to ask a question, so I thought that I would take it up here and maybe turn it over with you and see what comes of it. So another short quote that I wanted to start with. This is something that I found years ago, and it always struck me. This is from the journals of Franz Kafka. This is from a section called Reflections on Sin, Pain, Hope, and the True Way. And he says, "The true way is along a rope that is not stretched at any great height, but just above the ground. It seems intended more to cause stumbling than to be walked along." And I didn't know that Hojun was going to talk about falling on the ground and getting up by the ground, but it seems appropriate. So in Zen practice, we encounter many forms, lots and lots of forms, right and wrong way to hold your bowls, to wash your bowls, to offer incense, to hit a bell, to walk, to count your breath, to hold your hands. Dogen has a whole fascicle on how to wash your face. This can get very detailed. So when we look at this, we encounter there's many opportunities to get it right, and there's many opportunities to screw it up. So there's many opportunities to judge yourself, and there's many opportunities to judge other people. And we take advantage of both. You know, we tend to fall on one side or the other when we are confronted with a way to do things. We can go towards sort of a perfectionist obsession. I'm going to get this right. Damn it. You know, or we get really sort of casual to the point of being complacent. You know, Daido used to always rail about Buji Zen. He would say, you know, everything I do is Zen. And then he'd go off for a while. And both of these approaches, it's, you know, I was thinking, am I more casual or am I more, you know, obsessive perfectionist? And actually I'm both. And I invite you to consider finding both of those in yourself as well. So mistakes, of course, are essential in life. They're a part of life. So for the last few years, I've been working in a research lab studying molecular biology. And I was thinking about mistakes. You know, from a scientific point of view of molecular biology, mistakes are critical for evolution. Evolution and in fact life couldn't have taken place without mistakes. There's an enzyme that called a polymerase that copies the genome, the DNA or the RNA genome. And this thing moves along, and it inserts a complementary nucleotide to every nucleotide it finds. But it makes mistakes sometimes, too. And without mistakes, organisms would not be able to change and evolve. They wouldn't be able to adapt to changing conditions. On the other hand, if it makes too many mistakes, then, you know, the game is up also. There's a term for this for people who study origin of life, sort of abiogenesis, or this also, you see this also with retroviruses, these very small things. It's called the error catastrophe threshold. And the error catastrophe threshold is the rate of making mistakes that's so much that the whole system just comes apart. The information is lost. And so retroviruses, for example, a lot of them operate right up against the error catastrophe threshold. It's sort of their strategy. They can outrun the host immune system by making so many mistakes that they can evolve faster than the host can. And, you know, I feel a lot of times I had that, you know, my experience of Zen practice is of being pushed right up against the error catastrophe threshold. You know, it's especially I was thinking when I was cooking, it's like you've got to take care of this and you've got to watch this and the other thing. And if you make one small mistake, you know, one day I plugged in both of the rice cookers into the same outlet and it blew the fuse. I came down ready for lunch and the rice was cold, you know, so error catastrophe threshold. You know, in art also, mistakes are essential. If you're trying to write a poem or paint, you know, usually you don't end up where you thought you were going to go. If you do, it's usually because it's dead. It's kind of delightful. You know, it's difficult because you get frustrated and you think, oh, this isn't working. I remember Pat Steer told a story. She's the one who painted this big waterfall in the Sangha house. Also, there's one of her pieces in Hojin's Daisan room. She was trying to copy some sort of technique that she had seen in Chinese painting, and she started throwing paint at the canvas and watching it drip down. And Stephen Addis, who is the way she told it, he's a scholar, he's also an artist, and she asked him about it, and he said, I don't think you're doing what they were doing at that school of painting, but you actually maybe invented something else. You know, it's kind of interesting. And finally, there's a story of, when Dogen's great enlightenment, when he was studying with Tendo Nyojo in China, you know, the story is that he was sitting late at night in the Zendo, and Tendo Nyojo cried out, you know, to the monk sitting next to him, when you study under a master, you must drop the body and mind. What's the use of single-minded, intense sleeping? And Dogen had a great awakening. And you know, some of that, we had years ago a conference here, and some of the scholars were arguing that that Dogen didn't speak Chinese very well, and that's not all what Tendo Nyojo was saying. He was saying something entirely different. I forget what it was. You know, it was just something like, you know, for Orioki this morning, the first and third rows were something like that. But you know, it worked. So. So often, you know, when we make a mistake, when we notice that we've made a mistake, we get vertutzt. You know, it feels like the whole world is staring at us. Everyone sees, you know, what a giant schmuck I am. And the sense of self, of self-consciousness, becomes very acute. And people may be looking at you, but you know, I've over the years I've started to realize that a lot of times, you know, everyone's so caught up in their own drama that I mean, they're not particularly interested in what I'm messing up or getting right. Some of you are probably familiar. I was thinking of, there's this psychological study that was done a few years ago, And the people who are conducting this study asked the participants, they showed them a clip of people playing basketball. And they said, so just keep your eye on the ball and notice how many times the ball changes hands and just tell us at the end. And so they would do this, you know. And at the end they'd say, oh, 23 times. Did you see anything interesting? No. They pass the ball 23 times. They roll the clip back and they play it. And halfway through the clip, there's a guy in a gorilla suit that walks across the basketball court. And most people didn't even notice this. You know, it's... So I was thinking about mistakes, and I was trying to think about, you know, in what situations... I was thinking about mistakes, and then I was sort of upping the ante and thinking a little bit about misdeeds as well. You know, I didn't really want to talk about the precepts, but I find that they sort of were creeping into what I was thinking about. I didn't want to talk about them just because I don't feel like, you know, totally clear about that. But I was thinking about making mistakes, and it feels like I was thinking of them in terms of greed, anger, and ignorance. So making mistakes out of greed, anger, and ignorance, or perhaps at some point maybe misdeed out of greed, anger, or ignorance would be a better way to put it. And so, that, you know, it's a continuum. They're pretty innocuous. I was thinking about, say, ignorance. You know, making... a lot of times you just have to make a decision based on imperfect information. I was thinking of, you know, a few weeks ago, I had to go to New Jersey to pick up 600 pounds of cat litter, and that's another story. But I borrowed a Stefanos van to do it, and I got there and I picked up the cat litter, and I thought I'd do him a favor by filling up the van, but I didn't know that it was a diesel van, and I filled it up with regular gas, and so. About halfway back, I was in the middle of the BQE on a Friday morning, and the thing just died, and it was just totally stopped. You know, traffic going by me, and I was stuck there for like an hour until I finally got a tow truck. You know, but I was trying to do him a favor. It's just that I didn't have all the information I needed. And then there's acting out of greed or anger. And these kind of mistakes, they can be willful in a sense that we may see, you know, this isn't quite kosher, but I'm going to do it anyway. And, you know, everyone knows this. So, you know, you want what you want, and so you take it. You know, it could be something small, like taking a pen from the supply closet at work. Or, you know, it could be something quite large, like on a national scale, like something like, you know, imperialism or colonialism, where a whole country decides to take something. Or anger. You know, we get mad, and sometimes out of anger we say something. We know that this is going to be hurtful, and you can feel as the words leave your mouth, oh, no, 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 no. But the force of that feeling is too strong, and it happens. And there's another category I was thinking of in terms of how we experience mistakes, and this is this one is a little bit more difficult. It's you know painful to work with. This sense of my existence is a mistake. Something about me is a mistake, fundamentally. You know, this is very painful. You know, there can be, I'm thinking many different reasons for that. This, you know, maybe it was something from early childhood. It was communicated to you that you were a mistake, or you know, some people have even been told that you weren't planned. You were a mistake. You know, in some situations. It's communicated to people, subtly or overtly, based on characteristics, you know, gender, age, skin color, that you don't really belong here. And then the inevitable corollary of that is that other groups of people are told you are entitled to certain things. And of course, it may not be so clear, you know, one person may not be all on one side or the other, you know. We may find ourselves on different sides of this divide. And you know, another case is my experience of you know, people close to me who struggle with addiction or depression. You get this sense of what I've done with my life is a mistake, you know, and then that builds on itself, and you can get trapped in that sense of having made a mistake or being a mistake, and it's so, you know, it can be hard to talk to try and help someone in that situation. It's like the conviction of something is wrong is so strong that it's hard to get out of it. Some people don't get out of it. My understanding is, though, that whatever the mistake is, whether it's, you know, voluntary or involuntary or major or minor, the practice is essentially the same. It's the same practice that we offer in beginning instruction. See it, acknowledge it, let it go, and return to your practice. Now, in some cases, acknowledging it, I mean, that's two words, but there may be a lot of work in that, you know. Dogen says, leaving the gate, there is grass. Entering the gate, there is grass, though there is not a bit of grass for 10,000 miles. Stepping forward misses it. Stepping backward misses it. Taking one step misses it. Taking two steps misses it. And so, there are mistakes upon mistakes. You know, as I was preparing this talk, I was really, you know, of course, giving a talk, you know, or at least I do, I get the anxiety around, oh, I'm going to make a mistake, you know, I'm going to... And as I was studying it, I was thinking that what I was afraid of is that you know, I had this fear of not just making a mistake, but of saying something harmful in some way. And as I was looking at that, I brought it up with Hojen, and she said, I said, you know, I'm afraid when I give a talk that I might say something that's harmful. And she said, well, you might. And of course, this doesn't just happen in giving a talk. This is the situation of being a human being. You know, we do sometimes things that are harmful. I mean, I haven't ever met someone, I don't think, who can say that they haven't done something harmful at some point. If I did meet someone that said that, I'd run for my life. Daido Roshi used to always say, an unexamined mind is a dangerous thing. And it's, you know, as I reflect on this over and over, I you know, it seems to me, you know, no matter how clear you become or how clear you get, you can always screw it up. And on the other hand, no matter how bad you screw it up, you can always start over and take responsibility. You know, it's humbling, and at the same time, it's very encouraging or empowering. You can always start over too. And as I was sitting this, I you know, I kept remembering this passage that I had read in a book, and I looked it up and I found it. It's a book by the Russian writer Alexander Solzhenitsyn, And he was, if you're not familiar with his story, he was he was an officer in the Red Army on the Eastern Front in World War II. And then he was, in a private letter to a friend, he criticized Stalin. And so he was sentenced to 10 years of hard labor in the Gulag. And he survived, which was not a foregone conclusion. And when he got out, he started writing. And he wrote a lot, and one of the best-known works is called Gulag Archipelago. And it's sort of a part personal account, part history, and part, indictment of this whole system. And so he's very clear about what's wrong with it. But it was interesting, at one point he starts to consider, he says, you know, if I'm honest, really, if things had turned out only slightly differently, I can imagine that I would have been a member of the secret police. I would have been one of the jailers or the executioners in this system if only things had taken a slightly different course. Then he says, if only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were only necessary to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. And who is willing to destroy a piece of his own heart? Who is willing to destroy a piece of her own heart? Unfortunately, this is, it's kind of a rhetorical question, because I think we all are, that we try. That's what we try to do, to cut out the offending part. And, how is that with cutting your heart in two? Last night, one of the monitors said, encouraging us, said, it's not necessary to cut off thoughts. Just see your mind clearly. This is the practice here. We don't have to cut anything off. Just see. Just see our mind as it is. And maybe you're not able to let it go. You have those sharp scissors in your hand. You can't put them down. So when it's judging mind, just see the judging mind. You don't have to judge your judging mind. Dogen talks about somewhere cutting in two pieces and then cutting in one piece. And I think that's a nice description of Sesshin, cutting the heart into one piece. There's a sense in which, it's sometimes sharp and painful. It does burn a little bit. There's a sense of cutting, but it's the cutting into one piece. Hojin in her opening remarks, she talked about healing is making whole, and I think that's what we're doing here. And so we can. I think so much of Sesshin practice is just learning to trust that whatever mistakes we've made, or mistakes that have been inflicted on us, whatever harm we've done, or whatever harm has been inflicted on us, so here, in this place, this is a safe place to just see your own mind. Just to see the mind clearly. And that in itself is profoundly healing. You can rest in the silence, rest in the daily repetition, the need to manage anything. And trust your immense good fortune at having found this practice of Sesshin. And trust that it will benefit you and everyone that you come into contact with in ways that are inconceivable and immeasurable. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.